The Card Knock Life podcast is brought to you by Manatraders.com. Manatraders is your leading MTG and paper card and deck rental service. Use the promo code CardKnockLife, one word, at checkout for 14% off your first 4 months. Welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 135. I am Corey and... Yo, Daryl!
Yo!
Daryl's here. We're going to talk Modern today. A bit of a slow news week. There was no major Wizards of the Coast controversy. No one got disqualified in an appalling manner. I think news is good news, man, right?
I was going to say, we could use a slow news week, man. We've been brutalized for a while. We haven't got to talk about a lot of Modern.
That's right.
But we do have a few tournaments on the docket here. There was a modern individual open in Baltimore. There was a Modern Classic in Baltimore, and we had the Modern Challenge over the weekend. So we can just blast any of the sweet-looking decks that we see here. We'll talk, you know, top eights and all that fun jazz and see if there's anything we really like.
Yeah, man.
But
let me preface this with this, though, because before we go into this, and prior to this weekend, I've been hearing a lot of groaning about the Modern format in general. And it may just because Standard is so nice right now.
Yeah, Standard's real good.
There are a lot of people bitching about Modern and saying that you've got to play a linear deck. There's no interaction. We're back in the dredges of dredge Modern. Uh-huh. And so I don't know that I buy it, but I'm hearing a lot of that. I don't know what your opinion is on that, but I think maybe after looking at the results from this last weekend, we can maybe make a statement one way or the other.
I mean, just before I look at the results, because I haven't looked at the results really, just enough to know that I've seen a lot of Arglight Phoenixes.
So yeah,
cool. We'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah.
But I would prefer to be doing something proactively. I don't want to be trying to control the game. Just because Modern is a very swingy format where good top decks can end the games. So, like, in some formats, you can see just a top deck from literal nowhere in the middle of the game. It doesn't necessarily end the game. It just gives you a boost back into it.
Yeah.
And a lot of top decks in Modern are cards that just end the game, depending on what deck you're playing against. So I don't want to be trying to control in a lot of formats where there are combos where a decent top deck just ends the game.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I think that there are a lot of like fair deck players that are particularly frustrated with this current meta. Particularly, I'm hearing this from a lot of players that are onto the decks like Humans and Control and things like that. I think that you got to adapt, but
I can see why.
Yeah,
I can see why, because Modern is the kind of format that, because there's so much history of cards and so many different cards, it puts the squeeze on you. You only have 15 sideboard slots. You can only prepare for so many decks. So if your deck is not doing something inherently to close the game, then you have a very difficult time selecting the cards that are cards you need to be playing effectively.
Yeah.
And that's just going to be a symptom of, as this format gets bigger and bigger and the threats get more and more diverse, you're going to have those problems. And without taking a massive overhaul, you're not going to ban out everything that's going to make Control of a super, super viable option insofar as, you know, actual, like, there are fair decks, there are control decks, but you're not going to see a Modern meta dominated by one or two fair decks. And you would have to ban so many things for that to be a concept. And yeah. I don't think it's healthy for Modern for people not to be able to play combo decks. Like, your sweet cards rotate out of Modern and, or out of Standard, you want to be able to use them. And this is a place for those things to live where, you know, over the compendium of 10 to 15 years, we get to put together some things that are actually pretty cool. But I don't know. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, it's certainly a place for that. I mean, so is Legacy. But I think that there's still room for fair decks in Modern, and fair decks just need to pack some interaction and some disruption for those combo decks in order to, like, have a shot. I maintain that I think Bant Spirits is the best deck in Modern.
I still haven't played a game with the deck, so I don't know. Full disclosure, but it's put up some pretty decent results lately, so I'm not
It's been consistent.
To argue with you.
It's been consistently putting up results, too. In fact, in the Open, the most played deck on day two was Banned Spirits, 14 copies of Banned Spirits in day two. Now, there were none in the top eight for Baltimore for the Open. There was one in the Classic.
Looks like somebody bricked on Tiebreakers 10th place, Banned Spirits.
Yeah. Or excuse that me, there was not one in the Classic. There's one in the Challenge. Sorry. But yeah, we got a couple of them in the top 32. There's a guy on 10th, which is what you're referring to.
Yeah, I would imagine that that's a Breakers.
Yeah. 10th, 24th, 32nd, 29th.
Yeah, so Spirits won the Classic on Moto, 10th in the Open. You know, we're not really getting anything new in these decks, you know. Supreme Phantom kind of made the deck viable, giving you a second Lord, letting you play a Merfolk-like game where you can just double Lord your opponent and kind of kill them out of nowhere off of Collected Company. And, like, Lord, untap Lord with a Vial. But you are seeing sort of a core that looks like a Merfolk game. Four Supreme Phantom, four Dark Soul Captain, three Phantasmal Image. Sort of giving your combination of Lords. Dark Soul Captain, I think, is just a more superior Lord than to Island Walk. Hexproof is just so powerful for creatures. And your Disruption is a little bit better than Merfolk's Disruption. Spellcaller is kind of leaps and bounds better than, you know, the second best Merfolk Disruptor, because you have something comparable with Mausoleum Wonder against Curse Catcher that actually gets better as your Mausoleum Wonder gets more and more powerful. So I just think that kind of Spell Queller is that card that puts this over the top of Merfolk. And then the second Lord in Supreme Phantom lets it play the Merfolk Lord game where you just get a very aggressive beatdown hand.
I mean, most of these... You can compare this to Merfolk all day, but I think the similarities for me really stop at Mausoleum Wanderers like Curse Catcher, because this deck is completely different. I mean, it could be a tempo deck. It's a tribal deck. It goes wide. Yeah. But this deck just has so much potential to deal with a lot of the issues that are in Modern. And
I totally agree. I just kind of wanted to point out that, like, giving it the Merfolk angle with the second Lord has actually vaulted the deck into being more powerful than it was before. And it was sort of a fringe player before. It was pretty good. But getting that tempo plan toward against decks like Tron, you don't have a lot of land hate. But you can just go like turn one, Wonder, turn two, you know, Lord, turn three, second Lord, and actually have a pretty robust clock going where if they don't Tron you immediately and kill your things, they're probably going to die.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that to be fair, and this deck probably deserves some credit even before Supreme Phantom was printed. And I'm sure it was a very viable deck, though we hadn't really found this particular 75 and this particular shell with the Cocos and the Aether Vials until we were motivated by Supreme Phantom and Remorseful Clerics printing. So I think that's good to push us in that direction. Honestly, like, Supreme Phantom is most often the card that I'm boarding out copies of when I'm going to games 2 and 3, because in the games where I don't want to just, like, full-on be the Spirits beatdown plan, I need to make room for like, my sideboard cards, and going wide is not the way to do that. But, hey, here's the thing. I want to compare this to Humans more than anything, because Humans was previously the king of the Modern castle, and the issue with Humans right now is it loses to a lot of these graveyard decks, it loses pretty bad to Dredge, because it doesn't really have access to the useful sideboard cards that, like, you can actually play in Magic, because the mana base is so restrictive to creatures, and specifically human creatures. So there's not a really solid, like, human creature that really hoses the graveyard strategies or deals with all of the, you know, wealth of graveyard interactions that, like, decks like Dredge and Phoenix decks play. But Banned Spirits can play a sideboard where we're, like, running three copies of Rest in Peace, we're running Stony Silence, we're running Counter Spells, we're running Warship, Tormod's Crypt. It's like...
Yeah,
it's pretty. You pretty much get everything you can ask for in Modern sideboard and Bant colors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that it will keep Spirits as a very viable deck moving forward. I have not played it to be able to say, oh, it's just the best deck. So I'll let you make that claim unopposed.
All right, thanks. It's my go-to. I'd be very comfortable taking it to a big tournament these days, but that's not.
I'll buy that. That's a good thing to say. Is that, like, it's a deck that's worth putting enough effort to be comfortable to play in a big tournament.
Yeah.
That's that. that is a more valuable statement to me than the best deck in Modern, because you're not really going to see a Modern where there's a by far and away 20% best deck, or there's just going to be a band that smashes it in one.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I just like to stir the pot. You know that.
Sure, I understand.
But so where do you want to? So let's start with the Open.
Start with the Open. All right. So I got everything pulled up here.
Yeah.
We got basically Standard. We're basically playing Standard in the Open. We got Azorius Control. We got Jeskai Control. We got Phoenixes.
we got Jund. We got Green Black Rock. Right.
We got Golgari nonsense. And Death Shadow is kind of the outlier in ninth place there, but or in fourth place. But I'll go through the top eight. It's Is It Phoenix from Ross Merriam, finally locking down a nice little 2-day open win, not having to watch the bitter agony of Ross's defeat on camera. Mono Red Phoenix, third place Azorius Control, fourth place Grixis Death Shadow, fifth place Jund, sixth and seventh were Seth Manfield and Brad Nelson. With Jeskai Control? I don't know why they were there. I'm kind of confused. Maybe they just wanted to do some open grinding, I guess. And then eighth place, Karklan Ironworks combo.
Yeah, so let's start with this, Daryl. Was there anything about this top eight that surprised you?
Phoenix decks. Yeah, yep.
How about all that control?
So the control decks don't surprise me because of the players. If they thought that Jeskai Control was just like the deck you could play that would just like body people, then I'm completely and totally unsurprised that it, you know, that people got bottomed by Jeskai Control. So I'm looking at the 275s between Brad and Seth, and you know, there's minor differences. Seth played a Settle the Wreckage and Supreme Verdict to play a Medley Mage. Brad played two Supreme Verdicts. Pretty much looks like everything else is pretty standard. Kind of some surprises. Only two Celestial Colonnade in Brad's list. So he's decided to move away from trying to like nickel and dime them and like use this really awkward tap out land to try and win the game, which I actually think is correct in Jeskai Control. I just wouldn't be playing Celestial Colonnade. It just is so unwieldy for like what you're trying to do in your game plan. It's really good against Liliana. Like that's kind of the problem is if Liliana is their magic card, it's prevalent. Then you kind of have to have colonnades to beat it.
Sure.
But like otherwise, I'm not particularly high on Celestial Colony. So it's kind of a fresh thing to see people walk away from. But otherwise, you're just seeing kind of Brad's on the burn plan. He's got three Electrolytes, three Bolt, three Helix, and four Snapcaster. And so most of the time, he's just winning games by letting you play a Fetch Shock and kind of going to town on your mana.
Yeah, I would be inclined to think that Jeskai would be a pretty good choice in this meta. I mean, we're looking at, like, top four most played decks, Humans, Bant, Spirits, Mono Green, Tron, and Dredge. Now, if I want to, like, counteract the Dredge plan, I want access to white in a deck that can play something like Rest in Peace or some kind of, like, Mass Removal that exiles, Settle the Wreckage, Anger the Gods.
Yeah, I was going to say, neither of these decks are playing, Seth is playing Rest in Peace, Brad is not.
Yeah, Seth, I would argue that Seth's deck is better suited for dealing with the graveyard decks overall because it's got the main deck Settle. It's got Anger in the sideboard, which I'm really high on right now. I think that's a really good choice. And Rest in Peace in the sideboard. I mean, he's not messing around with the graveyard.
No, so I've been considering playing Blue Moon just because, like, you can play mainboard Anger and it's not embarrassing. And then, like, you can have, like, Relics and Surgicals and, like, Blue Moon can realistically play like a mainboard Relic or two and not really lose much because the only thing you're doing is Snapcastering. So if you play something like Cackling Drake, the 4-mana Drake from the new set, as like a finisher, you get a cantrip off of it and it's just like a 10-10 or 10-4 or whatever and you can just kill your opponent in 2 hits.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, so I mean, it's something that I've been keeping an eye on and trying to figure out how to put all the pieces together because I think Blood Moon is pretty powerful right now.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of these Phoenix decks are red, if you save your counter spells to get after Mana Morphos, which filters the mana and allows them to play those multiple spells in one turn, it actually puts you in a pretty good place. I think the hardest part is like Thing in the Ice is a very difficult card to kill. So like for a red deck, so you do run into that as a problem.
Can we talk about, like, can we compare these two decks? Are these guys, like, kind of coming from the same, like, area of thinking in that they are looking at this meta, thinking that we've got a lot of really aggressive decks and we've got a lot of creature decks. And yep. the way that we combat that is with
A bunch of one mana removal spells.
Yeah, and Lightning Helix seems like a good choice right now. But
absolutely.
What really stands out to me in these, both of these decks, there are zero copies of Jace, which I would like completely support. Jace seems pretty awful right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, in my Blue Moon decks that I've been testing, I haven't even been playing Jace. I've switched Jace out for Drakes. I've been trying Rao, is it Viceroy?
Yeah, the format's just so fast.
Yeah, just because, like, for the late game Rao, is it Viceroy can actually kill, like, a Tarmogoy.
Yeah.
So, like, it gives your red deck a way to beat a Tarmogoy that also, you know, after you plus it a couple times, just kills your opponent. But they are playing a pile of Teferis. They are playing three Teferis, which is a lot of Teferi.
They've also got three Electrolyze in both decks.
That card is
oftentimes just completely omitted.
That card is very good right now. Like,
yeah.
It's so underrated because, like, the option of Fork Bolt is legitimate. Like, honest to goodness, it's going to kill most creatures in this format. Like, there are things like Reflector Mage and, you know, various other X3s, Tarmogoyf. Yeah, Tarmogoyf, Mantis Rider, that you're not going to kill. Like, sure, you're not going to get those things. And you have Path to Exile and Lightning Bolt to clean those up. But, like, you can kill half of the Lingering Souls, or you can kill two Phantasmal Images, or you can kill, you know, a 2/2, and then you get a cantrip with it. So, like, a lot of these decks are playing, like, Opt or Serum Visions and trying to, like, get their cantrips that way. And it makes it really hard to, like, play cantrips because you don't have the time to do nothing. So I'd rather be playing cards that do something and give me a free cantrip. And Electrolyze is a big example of one of those cards.
Yeah. Now, I also think, like, I mean, it has obviously obvious applications in the decks that are, like, creature decks, right? Against the creature decks, I should say. But
absolutely.
I think it's pretty good against Tron, too, because you're going to the, like, Burn the Dome plan, and to deal two damage and replace the card with a potential, like, extra burn spell, I think that's pretty strong.
Yeah, absolutely. It does give you kind of a direction against Tron. And Hieroglyphic Illumination is something that both of these guys included in many copies as their sort of Serum Visions like Cantrip that also doubles as like a draw two.
Two Logic Knots in Seth's list, three in Brad's. Both have three Lightning Helix, four Path, and three Bolt.
Yep.
Three Cryptics in Seth's list, four in Brad's.
I just
overall like Seth's list better than Brad's.
Brad's list I'm not a huge fan of. I do like Lyra in the sideboard.
You're right.
No, Seth is just playing Baneslayer Angel.
Yeah.
And the only reason I like the concept of Lyra is that if you want to get cheeky, over that Baneslayer Angel, you could include a Restoration Angel and still have lifelink and like have a flash creature. But that's kind of like a very corner case that you can get cute with. But yeah, I think that the Rest in Peace, Stony Silence combination, I like the Abrade. I would consider Wear Tear in that slot, but I think Abrade just might be better right now. Like you don't really, there aren't a lot of enchantments you have to beat in this format.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not
that this guy cares about, really.
Yeah, the one Geist gives you a chance on the beatdown plan.
I like Geist a lot, especially considering like Tron is inevitable and also a pretty good choice right now. You're going to see a lot of that. Geist just is like your best thing against Tron for these decks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Start the clock. I don't know. I find this interesting that we're seeing control decks in the top eight, two of them, and two very high-profile players decided that they were a good choice. Despite, like, all of this groaning and maybe I'm only perceiving this myself, but I'm hearing a lot of, we can't play control, we can't play fair decks right now. I don't see the argument that, like, control is bad right now. I think that it's actually well-positioned. I think Jeskai stands to make a comeback at this point in time.
Yeah. I think you're close to right, but I think the complaint of the control deck is, like, some people may be playing it badly, and I think you do have to be, like, supremely overrepresented because of how things do have to break for you to, like, have a pretty solid tournament.
Yeah, that's
everything
true.
Has to fall into place. So I think that's the complaint, is that like it's not like control can't dominate, which I don't think is the thing that should happen, because that kind of makes the format pretty miserable. So.
Yeah. So while we're on the topic of control, let's look at this Azorius Control deck by Joe Blizzard, which is a fantastic last name, by the way.
Yeah, this is just Miracles. This is the Miracles deck that we've seen before.
Yeah, it's pretty stock. I don't know where this two Baneslayer Angels and no Lyra Dawnbringer comes from in the sideboard. Maybe he just didn't have the Dawnbringer, but it seems like
it's
one split there.
It's possible he could just not have the Lyra. Does Lyra have Vigilance?
It is the same exact thing as Baneslayer, with the addition of +1/+1, 2 angels, and lifelink.
Yeah, so the only thing you lose there is, other than pumping the Baneslayer angel, which is the most corner of cases, you lose to Meddling Mage a little bit. So.
Oh, yeah. And protections from demons and dragons?
kind of relevant. There's not a dragon.
We've talked about it. It's a non-zero thing, like, I like it against Stormbreath.
Yeah, no, doesn't do anything.
Yeah, they can just ignore each other. Yeah, it can't be blocked. It's so gaining 5 and dealing 5 offsets the 4 you're taking from Stormbreath.
Yeah, okay, forgot. I was like, Stormbreath you can't block Stormbreath. Why does that matter? Yeah. There we go. You're correct.
Protection from Phoenixes and Drakes.
is the nonsense Drake actually a Drake and not a dragon?
It is a Drake. Cackling Drake is a Drake.
That's stupid. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Sure.
I don't know what the difference is. They're the same thing.
Sure.
Right. Just ask Khaleesi.
Yeah. But, this is pretty standard. Rest in peace, Night Silence, Purge. No, knows what he's targeting. Plays the cards that beats those things. Like, the control decks are viable. You just have to, like, you do have to run kind of good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
You have to see Terminus when you need it. And I'm guessing that Joe did that a lot in this particular
weekend. There's definitely a thing that I've come to learn about playing Terminus is that you just kind of have to be lucky with it sometimes.
Yes, you do.
Like you include it in your deck as a 4-of because you know you want to draw it. But sometimes you just got to have it bail you out. And it sounds like, better be lucky than good. But like, sometimes you do have to get lucky, otherwise we're playing chess.
I watched a friend of mine lose in a very heartbreaking fashion in the PPTQ because his opponent was like down to one card in hand, had a Serum Visions, drew a card, scryed the top 2, and I was watching him like see nothing but lands. So then he like fetches in the next turn and like ops, puts the card on the bottom of the library, that wasn't it, and then finds a Terminus underneath all of that nonsense and just, like, completely changes the tides of the game.
Hey, man.
It happens, right? That's why you play the card, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But whenever I play that deck, I always end up with the Terminus in my opening hand, and I just die too aggressive.
See, I'm just not a fan of playing Terminus without top. I feel like that's just a really good...
Or Brainstorm.
Yeah, that makes it a little rough. But no, this deck is completely fine. It deals with Phoenix in a way that, like, puts them on the bottom. But yeah. let's get to the start of the show. Phoenix had a really, really good weekend. Phoenix was first and second place in the Open. I don't know how it did in the Classic. I got that over here. It was, I don't know if this runaway red deck is playing it. It was first place in the Classic. And it was second place in the Challenge.
Yeah, not to mention, if we dive further in the Open, it was in 20th and 26th as well, for what that's worth.
One of them was Runaway Red. Two of them were
Second place was Mono Red Phoenix.
And then the first place in the Challenge, or the Classic, was Runaway Red.
Gotcha.
Runaway Steamkin Red.
Uh-huh.
But Arclight Phoenix is a really good Magic card in formats where there are very cheap spells.
Yeah.
Metamorphos is free. Gutshot is cheap. Faithless Looting gets them in your graveyard.
Flame Jab is cute.
Flame Jab is a thing you can do. Chart of Course, the standard All-Star, Thought Scour. Like, there's a lot of things to like here with your ability to, like, set up your graveyard and get to a position where you can trigger Arclight Phoenix. And some people just don't play around you casting it as a 4-mana 3/2. with haste. Like, sometimes you just get to that mode, and that's okay.
Yeah, that is the advantage of this. Like, compared to, like, Creeping Chill, like, you think about those two cards, and, like, man, the rate is just so bad on, like, actually playing the card, but it really isn't. Like, four mana for 6-point life swing is sometimes all you need in Dredge with the Creeping Chills, and four mana for a 3-2 haste is sometimes all you need in a modern.
Hey, 3-2 flying. Flying is a
3-2 flying haste. Yeah, oh, yeah, it's very relevant. Just forgot. Yeah.
And so, but the key here is, like, when you look at these unfair decks like Hollow One, I would rather play a deck with Phoenix than Hollow One. Because, like, Hollow One, to enable that, you play the same most of the discard outlets. But you also play this, like, Burning Inquiry, which is this really awkward randomizer. Same thing with Goblin Lore.
Awful.
Whereas, like, you know, otherwise your Hollow Ones are just annoying 4/4s that you have to pay 5 to cast. And they're artifacts, so they just die to random garbage. Whereas this, you know, dies to Bolt, unlike Hollow One, and all the, like, small creature removal, but it's a mana cheaper to cast when your games are going bad, and you still have the upside. If you just sandbag a couple spells over the course of the game, you can bring a couple of them back and actually do something. So that's a very relevant piece of function on this card. And when you combine it, and we'll go through Ross's list with 4 Arclight Phoenix, 3 Tackling Drake, 4 Thing in the Ice, 2 Swift Spear, you have all these creatures that care about your casting spells.
Yeah.
So, like, it lets you play these cheap enablers to, like, to power through your deck, to have big wraths with Thing in the Ice, to do big damage, to have some, like, card advantage going late with a bunch of Cackling Drakes. And then you just have a lot of cards to draw you cards and a lot of velocity to see a lot of your deck. So it's a very kind of standard format for these Xerox tempo decks.
I should hope that if one were to walk into Ross Merriam's living room today, they might see, like, formulas etched all over the wall and, like, nonsense scribbled and, like, torn papers all over the living room, because for him to come up with this 13 creature suite of 2 Monastery Swift Spear, 4 Thing in the Ice, 4 Arclight Phoenix, and 3 Cackling Drake, I've got to imagine that there was some complex mathematics going on. What the hell?
The 2 Swift Spears bother me.
That's weird, isn't it?
Like, I would rather it be like 2 Bedlam Rovers or like a 4th Cackling Drake and something else.
I mean, the Swift Spear is probably really good when it's like, good.
Like, you know what, Corey? I'd take a single Delver.
Oh, man. I like that. 29 spells? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 2 of Delver for maximum tilt. Like,
I mean, you can't just run the 3rd and 4th one, because then you're down to 27 spells, and 27 spells just won't do it. No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
I mean, it actually probably won't in this deck, to be 100% honest.
Yeah. I mean, maybe these 2 Monastery Swift Spears just need to be some, like, other copies of Bolt. You know, like, some alternative. Course.
Yeah, some generic shock or something like that. Pillar of Flame.
Yeah. But the big difference between the Izzet and the Mono Red Phoenix deck is that the Izzet decks are more like Phoenix Thing in the Ice, and the Mono Red decks are more like Phoenix Bedlam Raveler. Yeah, Swift Spear.
Yeah.
So I kind of like both approaches. I really like the interaction between Bedlam Raveler and Maximize Velocity and Arclight Phoenix and Maximize Velocity.
I don't even know what Maximize Velocity does. That card's dope, now that I read it.
One mana
sorcery gives creature 1/1 and haste on the turn with jumpstart. That's real strong.
So you're living the dream when you discard your hand to Bedlam Reveler. You play a 2-mana Reveler. You put a Maximize Velocity in the yard, and then you pitch the, like, excess
generic,
that you draw.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
the generic land.
To be attacking with a 5/6 hasty Reveler there. That's pretty fancy, isn't it? Probably getting the Phoenix back, too.
Yeah, so you get the Phoenix back, you get him for 8, you can jumpstart again. All kinds of nonsense. That seems really strong. Let me see the Runaway Red. The one from the classic Runaway Steamkin was kind of the big man on campus there, as we've expected. Which I just stunned. Yeah. Whenever you cast a red spell, Runaway Steamkin has feared 3 counters on it, 3 1/1 counters on it, put a 1/1 counter on it, remove 3 1/1 counters, add 3 red. So, I mean, you're getting that Arclight Phoenix Bedlam Reveler concept there with the ability to just go very deep in your deck with a bunch of risk factors and Manamorphose and Tormenting Voice to just build counters. And if you put a Bedlam Reveler in play and sort of in the middle of this, or Soulscar Mage, you're just going to have this, like, monstrous creature that you can just slap them with.
Yeah. Notably, Jeffrey Clark did not play any Runaways Teamkins in his list. He was the second place player in the Open. But you're referring to Aaron Sanford's version.
Yeah,
who was the runaway winner of the Classic. Yeah, he's even got a main deck surgical extraction. I like that.
Hey, man, sometimes you need some free spells.
There's always a target, right?
I mean, most of the time there is a target. And sometimes you just need some free spells. And then the one from the challenge that got second place is Runaway Steamkin Red with a Ramenop Ruins and then some sideboard Eidolon the Great Rebels. Like, these decks can just kill you scary fast if you don't have the correct interaction.
Right.
These Arclight Phoenix decks, they make me want to play a bunch of spell snares because the key, I think, to shutting down the big turn for these decks,
Manamorphose.
Is countering Manamorphose.
Or Tormenting Voice, for that matter.
Or Tormenting Voice.
Chart of Course. Lots of good targets. Bane the Ice.
Yeah, so I think that like the spell snares are your key to shutting down these big turns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree. I think those are good.
So I think that there should be a bit of an uptick in that card in the future.
Did any of those Jeskai Control decks play Spell Snare? I don't think so.
None of them did.
I mean, they probably weren't going to this weekend expecting that Arclight Phoenix was going to be the deck.
Yeah, Runaway Steamkin was not the card they had in mind.
Or Runaway Steamkin,
Yeah. Like, most people, I think you'll see one at most. I think it's a solid, playable two of in most of these decks. Because you'll see decks of Snapcaster. You'll see, Negate, Remand in the blue cards. You'll see Tarmogoyf and Bob. You'll see all these crazy red cards. Like, I don't see a reason why, if you're playing a blue deck, you wouldn't have two of these in your 75 in some way, shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah. So all right, how about this? There's also a lot of Grixis Death Shadow going on in the Open. There's one in 4th, there's one in 9th, and these decks have basically changed to completely cut the Planeswalkers from the list. They're no longer running Kolaghan's Command. It's just like a pile of discard spells and like just more draw spells. They're playing Mishra's Baubles in them now. And Temur Battle Rage. So is this like a good deck to play when you're expecting a lot of combo because you can pick part of the combo with the discard spells? I mean, I don't want to be dealing all this damage to myself if I'm up against like Phoenix Aggro.
So Legacy has shown you that that's actually the exact point of this deck is to pick apart the combo decks. So Legacy, it gets more pronounced with Daze and Force of Will and stuff like that. The key of being able to enable having a large creature very early in the game and back it up with discard and negate, basically, is super functional. So I like the one Faithless Looting in this deck to give you sort of the ability to get rid of whatever mismatch pieces come through, whether it's extra lands or Fatal Push gets combo, to sort of filter through the good and the bad cards.
Yeah, that is good. I like that a lot, too. That's a big deal with this deck. At least when I play it, I flood out, and it just seems so bad when I'm drawing lands off the top.
Yeah, but, like, you just try it. Your goal here, I think that you play the 4th Thought Scour in the main deck, is to try and, which I guess the Faithless Looting is playing a proxy for, is to try and stick a Gurmag or a Death Shadow in turn 2, by using some discard and some fetches, and then just back it up with Stubborn Denial and more discard. And if you get them to a low enough life total, you have the Temur Battle Rage in your back pocket that you can just end the game with, which is really strong against the combo decks.
Yeah, I suppose that plan is probably pretty good against the like mono red and the blue red decks because there's not a lot that they can do about a Death Shadow that's like an 8/8 or a 10/10, right? They're going to have to chain like 3 or 4 burn spells against it, and then you're like, oh, actually, I've got a Street Wraith, and it's bigger.
Yeah, and then, you get the instant kill potential of, like, here's some double strike and trample.
Right, yeah. That's the issue.
Like, get out of here.
They don't run, like, it's not like there are a lot of decks that just, like, gum up the board with 1/1s these days. There's not much Lingering Souls being played. And, for you to worry about, like, getting chump blocked 2 or 3 times, like, it's not really a concern if that's causing them to not attack you. But, granted, the Phoenixes can do it.
Yeah, getting chump blocked is a huge beating. But, I mean, if you're talking about Phoenix's blocking duty, that means you're already winning. Like, because your opponent is spending so many of their resources to get back chump blockers.
Right, that's true.
And realistically in this deck, you're going to have counter spells, you're going to have discard, you're going to be able to keep them limp choked on the number of cards they have. So you're going to make it really hard for Arclight Phoenix to come back in the graveyard.
Hey, why do you think Max Medeiros is running Radiant Flames in the sideboard over Anger of the Gods?
Just because I got nothing on that one, actually.
He's got two Kolaghan's Command in the sideboard. I mean, you put the Kolaghan's Commands in and you want to be able to get back your Snapcasters.
I think it's you just don't want to anger a Snapcaster away. Sometimes you might have to play a small Death Shadow to like make your opponent make decision. Like, because realistically, you can cause a decision to be made from like whether or not you have to block.
Yeah.
So like, do you really want to attack? Because then the Death Shadow becomes like a 7/7, and then you could just die to Team or Battle Rage. Like, what do you do? So,
so I hear that, but I don't buy it.
Anger's
got to be better.
Nope, Anger's not better because you don't need two red sources, and he only has three red producing lands.
Oh, okay. Well, these other guys are running Anger in their sideboard, and I think it's worth the risk. It's just so strong right now.
It's just super ambitious to try and play Anger because you do need double red.
I mean, you can... Yeah, I suppose. When you're at three mana, though, in this deck, you're going to fetch and shock every time you can, roughly. But granted, when you want to be angering, you're probably being a little bit more cognizant of your life total.
Yeah, you're a lot of basics.
Three lands, so. You should be able to represent red, red, blue, black, black, blue, whatever, whatever else.
Yeah, I understand your thought there. But yeah, I think he's just being a little conservative.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to talk about from the open? There was Ironworks.
Yeah, Ironworks is just sort of normal old Ironworks. I'm sure. Let me take
Joan, how many Assassin's Trophy do they run in Joan these days? Three? My guess is two. Well, he's got three. He's got three Dark Confidant, three Scavenging Ooze. All right, that's pretty heavy on the Scooze. Four Goyf.
He wants to be Arclight Phoenix.
Yes, he does. Four Bloodbraid Elf. I mean, there's so many targets for Scooze right now. I can see it.
I'm a big fan of Ishkanagraft Widow on the sideboard. That's pretty dope.
Oh, that is dope. Yep. So here's the main, though. Three Dark Confidant, three Scooze, four Tarmogoyf, four Bloodbraid Elf, four Lily of the Veil, one Liliana of the Last Hope, excuse me.
Some lands with only three Raging Marines.
Two Push, four IOK, four Bolt, two Thoughtseize, three Assassin's Trophy, and two Kolaghan's Command.
Yep.
Just, it's pretty stock. I mean, these numbers are a little different than what we're used to seeing, but the inclusions are all there.
I mean, it's just the influx of how you split your removal spells because Assassin's Trophy is now a magic card.
Yeah.
It takes up the two Abrupt Decay slots or the one Abrupt Decay slot, but how many do you want and how do you fit them in? You know, do you want Pulse? Do you cut Pulse? So it's just kind of finagling the standard expectation of, like, how do we fit all of the removal spells we want in the deck. That Ironworks deck that you brought up, nice little Psy Master Falcris in the main board and a pair in the sideboard.
Dude, that card's gas.
There's also just randomly a Spine of Isha in the sideboard of the Ironworks deck, or the main deck of the Ironworks
deck. Yeah, that's becoming a thing.
That's weird. Like, I get that it's 7 mana and you can blow up their Stony Silence and sacrifice it and then go off, but like... That's really ambitious. 7 mana is really ambitious in your 18 land deck.
Yeah, I don't know how that all works out, but you can see the controversy between running Engineered Explosives as you're out to Stony Silence.
That's pretty bad.
Getting up to 7 mana, like you said, is very difficult to do with a Stony Silence too, because you're not going to be KCIing any of your stuff away.
Risky business, yeah. As far as like decks I want to look at from the classic or the open, I got two more.
Okay.
I got Martyr Proc, mono white Martyr in 11th place. So it's Martyr of Sands based. Reveal X white cards from your hand and pay a mana. It's a 1/1. Pay one, reveal X white cards from your hand, sacrifice Martyr of Sands, gain 3x X life. And that powers Saracen to be a 6/6. But this is just good old fashioned mono white creatures.
Yeah. Those decks are cool. I don't know. Works.
So I really like Proclamation of Rebirth with Ranger of Eos.
Yeah, that is a fun combo.
Really, it gives you a really nice like toolbox of things you can do. You can play Hex Parasite. You can play Kami of the False Hope, I think it's called, that like is a fog. So you can tutor up a fog. And then you can Proclamation Forecast and always have a fog on the table. So like you can lock a human's opponent out of the game.
But what does it exactly say though? Because it's not really fog. It's like gain the life you lost back.
No. That's Children of Corlys. Kami of the False Hope is literally fog.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Gotcha. So you can like literally fog block your attacking opponents.
Yeah. I mean, what decks, like, looking at the top few decks in Modern right now, like, there are very few of them that can just kill you by other means. Like, it's not like we have an Infect running around, or not like Ad Nauseam is running around. Like,
yeah.
Your life total is relevant. So the argument that, like, you can gain, you know, up to 45 life with a, what is the card called? The
Martyr of Sands.
Martyr of Sands, yeah. And it doesn't matter because your opponent's just going to combo you out of the game. Like, they really... I don't see anything on here that really.
So it's not 40. It's not 45 life. It's 27, or 21.
I mean, 21. You just do it over and over in that deck, like.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the top decks. I'm gonna look at the top 12 decks right now. Humans, Spirits, Tron, Dredge, Golgari Midrange, Grixis Deathshadow, Azorius, Hardened Scales, Stormburn, Jund, Titan Shift. So yeah. Very, very limited places that you can try and like blow your opponent out of the water with damage. And if you're those land-based decks, guess what? This deck has 4 Field of Ruin, 4 Ghost Quarter. Like, it's a mono-colored deck. It's going to disrupt your lands. Because it can afford to play these 8 colorless lands and not care.
Does it have Emyria?
It does. It has a pair of Emyrias.
Okay.
10 planes. So, and 2 Mistvale planes. So you have the long game of like, oh, I need a copy of Gideon of the Trials again. Put it on the bottom of my deck with Mistvale Plains. Oh, I need another land destruction land. Put it on the bottom of my deck. So like you have Squadron Hawk for shuffle. You can infinitely loop Squadron Hawk at some point if the game drags on long enough to have infinite shuffles. So it's a really grindy deck. It can be. I really just like the idea of like playing this deck. It looks really sweet. I would just want to have some Crucible Worlds in my deck to like. Punish my opponent with my 8 land destruction lands.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah, like this deck, like I would play a main board fog guy. I would not play Walking Ballista because it's so slow, but Hex Parasite is very good against your Planeswalker opponents.
Mm-hmm.
This deck is sweet.
So I want to talk about something in the Classic. You ready to transition?
I had one more deck, which was just the Grixis Werve Invention. It's like that blue-red prison deck.
Yeah, it's like New Lantern.
With the Ip New Rivulet kill. I'm trying to figure out, and there's Flashing Black for Tezzeret. Has a bunch of sweet cards on the sideboards, 4 Spellskite, a Padim, a couple Size. But it's just like that really awkward prison deck that tries to assemble this like Doomsday device and kill you with Ip New Rivulet and a single Crucible. I just like the deck. All right, that's all I have to say.
This guy has... Oh, he does have Mox Opal in it. Okay. Yeah. Say, this is just like an Ensnaring Bridge deck is what it is.
Yeah, it is.
Apparently that card's good.
Yeah.
Newsflash. All right.
Classic.
In the Classic, this is pretty shocking to me that we have Goryeo's Vengeance in third. And Goryeo's Vengeance is one of those decks that can be easily foiled, I'd say, by like the hate.
Feast or Famine. Oh, that's the card I think you're surprised about, I think.
There's an interesting card in here, but before we even get to that, the fact that this deck did so well in, like, a time of this, like, dredge fear, like, everyone's so aware of graveyard strategies, and everyone's just packing, like, abundant hate for graveyard decks, that the fact that this is, like, able to second place this Classic that kind of, like... Basically demonstrates the ability for graveyard decks to just not give a shit, you know?
Yeah, and do your thing.
So, but yeah, this one does run 4 copies of Discovery Dispersal, which is obviously the enabler for the standard Phoenix decks, but purely for Discovery, I take it. I mean, Dispersal is certainly like castable in this deck.
Yeah, I think it's definitely just for Discovery.
But yeah, Discovery is a really good way to
find
your enabler and put your target in the graveyard.
Discovery would be real busted if it was an instant.
Oh god, yeah, it is so not an instant. But hey, Dispersal is. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, I saw that and I was like, oh man, if Discovery was an instant, this would be dope. Because Discovery is Surveil 2, draw a card for 2 mana, which would just be way too good. And instant speed, considering Think Twice is draw a card at 2 mana. So, yeah.
When the game goes long, Dispersal is a way to kill an opposing Emrakul or Ulamog or...
yeah. an opposing Teferi type
Teferi,
thing.
Yeah, there's another one.
Yeah.
But yeah, this deck still exists. I really hate this deck.
Me too. Don't
terrible.
Feel bad.
It's a terrible thing for Modern. I'm sorry to say.
Not a fan. So let's slide over to the challenge real quick.
Okay.
First place spirits, Bant spirits, as you so accurately predicted, unknowingly. Second place, Runaway Red. Third place, Hollow One. Fourth place, Death Shadow. Fifth place is Valakut. Sixth place is, I don't even know what to call this deck, Red Green Hollow One. It's got Burning Emissary, Flame Blade Adept.
Yeah, Vengevine.
Yeah, it's like aggro Hollow One.
Yeah, it is. It's just a Jund Vengevine deck. It doesn't have Bridge.
Yeah, I mean, there's no black in it. The black is strictly Street Raid.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess you're right.
And Lich. An uncastable Leyline.
It has four black symbols and it doesn't need black mana.
Yep. But seventh place is Jund Death Shadow with like Traverse the Umenwald. And eighth place is Mono Blue Tron.
Yeah, this is Shock Troopa, who is like the Mono Blue Tron guru.
The god, yeah.
So it's not a surprise to me that...
No, everybody get out of this man's way. He is a god. And he will punish all of us. Ninth place is Blue White Spirits with Mainboard Ifara.
All right.
God of Polis. That's a 2 blue white indestructible 6/5 god. Devotion greater than 7. It's a creature. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you had another creature enter the battlefield under your control last turn, draw a card. So with Aether Vial and Rattle Chains, you can play on both players' turns and keep the cards flowing.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I don't really, I don't like it.
I mean, cool. I think it's a fine one. I think it's a fine one. It also works off of Moorland Haunt. So when you make spirits with Moorland Haunt back and forth, you get free token.
Oh, yeah. And it very well could be a 6/5 indestructible creature to attack. I don't know.
To get past exile, that make you very sad.
Yeah, well, it is not a creature when it is not devote, right? When you don't have the devotion. So that's an advantage for this card because it can't get passed.
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, it's kind of like a planeswalker in that it provides like repeatable card advantage like that, but it's much harder to interact with unless your opponent has enchantment, exile, and nothing else. You know, unless you accidentally turn it on. So you've got to be very wary of that.
And even then, you can try and like bounce your stuff to like turn it off and things like that.
Sure.
I don't know if this deck has any bounce in it, but that is
an option. No, I don't think so.
That's my Echo Intrusion sideboard, just in case. But not what you're bringing the Echo Intrusion for. 10th place, Boggle. 11th place is the blue-black... I do this with quotes, so you can't see me. The blue-black fairy is dead. It's basically Bitter Blossom control. So it's got 4 Bitter Blossom and 2 Spellstutter Sprite as the fairies package with a couple of Mutavaults. But the rest of it is pretty just blue-black control. It's 3 Jace, 3 Liliana the Veil, 4 Snapcaster, 4 Inquisition, 4 Seer Visions, 2 Cast Down, 3 Cryptic, 4 Push, a Hero's Downfall, 2 Spell Pierces, 3 Creeping Tarpits, 3 Field of Ruins, 2 Mutavaults, and some lands. And then in the board is a Hero's Downfall, a Disfigure, 2 Negate, a Relic, 2 Surgical, a Damnation, 2 EE, 3 Spell Bomb, a Spell Snare, and a Vendilion Click. So it's like Bitter Blossom control that like if you draw a Bitter Blossom, you're this aggro deck. Like you can play tempo with your Cryptic Commands and whatnot. Otherwise, you're just kind of this blue-black control deck that tries to kill everything and then like Snapcaster beat down your opponent.
Okay, I watched a guy play this at Regionals to a pretty respectable finish. And it looks like a pretty decent deck. He was playing against another control deck in the match I watched, and Bitter Blossom was just like walking all over him.
Yeah, but against any control opponent, you're just going to manhandle them when you play turn 2 Bitter Blossom. Like, Inquisition into Bitter Blossom is just the ball game against a control deck.
This just seems like a very... I don't know about this one right now. On paper, there are just so many liabilities. Like, Bitter Blossom is just, you're going to die.
You're killing yourself. Yeah. So you have to know how to turn the corner. That's the key to this deck, is that you have to be able to recognize when you can stop blocking and turn your token sideways and try and kill your opponent. Mm-hmm. And use Cryptic Command as an aggressive tool.
Right, yeah.
Turn your opponent's attack steps off, tap their blockers, untap an attack, and like, so you have to figure out that balance. When to activate what man lands and when to hold up your cryptics and stuff. It's not a skill that a lot of people have, because fairies was so long ago that we're not used to it anymore. But that is the key to this deck, is figuring out when you need to turn the corner. It's why Thoughtseize is obviously absent, because you want to have a bunch of these Bitter Blossom tokens. That's why you're only playing two Watery Grave, and you're limiting your fetch lands so that you can save as much life as possible to be able to make tokens.
Yeah, I think this is a testament, this particular list is a testament to the fact that Vanillin Click is just hot garbage right now. How could you not play one in the main deck of a Fairies list unless you really truly believe that a 3-1 just isn't going to cut it?
Yeah, and how can you not play four Spellstutters, right? And it's because you just don't have enough Fairies to make it work. So it's like an awkward deck. It's like, I want this 2-mana counterspell, but too many of it, and I'm just going to blow myself out. 12th place is Spirits. 13th is Green Black Rock.
Yep,
that's what that is. Yeah. I had to look and make sure there are no red cards. 14th is Storm. 15th is Burn. And 16th is Blue White Spirits. Oh, we got some more here. I got Affinity. Dredge, Death Shadow, Jund Death Shadow with the Traverse package. I got some humans in 21st.
Yes, you do.
I got Company. I got your old. Oh, no, this isn't Company. Yeah.
Yeah, this is
Company.
So I want to talk about this. This is kind of like a new thing. It's not even the Turbo Druid, because I'd say the Turbo Druid is kind of like the land that deals three to you and gives the creature haste and stuff.
Oh yeah, Hall of the Bandit Lord.
Yeah, Bandit Lord. So this one is like Evolution Druid is what it is. It plays four Eldritch Evolution to get the combo. It's the Devoted Druid combo.
The key inclusion here is why I call it Turbo Druid is the card Postmortem Lunge.
Uh-huh.
For those of you at home that don't know what that does, it's a Phyrexian Black sorcery. Return target creature or Phyrexian Black X. Return target creature with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste, exile 3 in the next end step. So the key there is if you end up with a Devoted Druid in your graveyard, you can pay 2 life and 2 mana to return it with haste and then tap it for mana to Court of Calling or Collect Company, or if you have your white creature in hand, you have a third white source, like a white source is your third land. You can tap Devoted Druid, play your White Source, play your Vizier Remedies, untap your Devoted Druid, make a bunch of mana, do the thing. And then you have a couple outlets with Shalai, Walking Ballista, and Dustwatch Recruiter.
It's pretty wild. It's got the spells package, 2 Summoners Pack, 4 Postmortem Lunge, 4 Court of Calling, 4 Eldritch Evolution, and we've got Coco. 1 Coco.
Yeah, a Coco.
You can't really afford to run more than that, but.
Yeah, that deck is really strange.
I've got to try it. I've got to give it a shot.
Yeah, we got.
There's 6 finishes with it online right now.
Yeah, we got 23rd is KCI with Mainboard Psy. And the Singleton Spine that we were talking about.
Maybe that's stock now.
Yeah, I mean, the Spine might be stock with the 2 size. I think the 2 size is a concession to Moto Clock. Maybe. I don't know. Because, I mean, you just make a gazillion Thopters, and then you just, pass, and,
it also bypasses the graveyard, right?
Yeah.
So with all the graveyard hate going around, you've got to size sometimes.
It does not bypass the graveyard, because, you get most of your artifact spells from doing the loop and trying to go through the motions.
But you're telling me that having 1/1 Thopters for the rocks that you play that you can't crack isn't an advantage? I mean,
an advantage. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying actually big finishing the game, you need the reader. Being able to cast Psy on turn 2 and make 3 or 4 1-1 chuckleheads to attack your opponent with is probably going to win the game oftentimes because they fly.
Yeah.
We got 24th is humans. 25th is our Pyromancer Ascension Bedlam Reveler Thing in the Ice Phoenix. There's a lot of things going on in that deck. Then we got Storm, Fant Spirits, looks like Amulet Titan, some Avalokut Titan, some Burn, some Green Red Zoo.
There's 8 rack. Is that your, or eight, 8 whack.
Yeah, that's what that is. I call it Green Red Zoo because I'm an idiot. Yeah, 8 whack. There's some. Oh, yeah, that's 8 whack. And then the last one is the Thing in the Ice Cackling Drake deck. So a lot of Thing in the Ice, a lot of Phoenixes, kind of the repeat performance here, the thing we've seen before from this weekend. I think that's the big theme is be ready for Arclight Phoenix to attack you in the sky.
Yeah. Be ready for Metamorphos being priced out of existence if this deck is.
Oh dear God.
This is long term.
I should definitely look at that real quick.
Yeah. Playset is $73.
It's going to spike anyways just because it won this weekend. Yeah. Oh, that's a foil one. Never mind. $19 right now for the MMA printing.
Yeah, we looked at that last week. It was 13 or 14. So after this weekend, it's gone up even further. Yep. That one's going to need a reprint soon.
So very quick, yes.
And I really don't see why it wasn't included in UMA. It was $10 before the UMA spoilers, but
draft doesn't fit well in draft.
Yeah, I don't really care about that though. This is Ultimate Masters. We talked about this. They got to pick a route and stick with it.
It goes back to our discussion of who cares about draft. Print the cards we want when we want them.
Yeah. What do we want? The cards. When do we want them now?
Yesterday. We want them yesterday.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I think we better close out. We have extensively looked at the modern results from this weekend at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to looking at them again in 2 weeks. However, next week we are not going to be casting. Is that correct? Right?
Oh, yeah, I'm getting married.
Yeah, dude. Like,
why are we casting? I was so confused. Yeah, I'm
You better make sure you're there, Daryl.
Dude, I'm going to be there. So, yeah, no. next week is going to be chaotic for me. I get to work. So we're going to drive the kids up to Maryland on Sunday and drive back here because our flight's out of RDU. So it's going to be 10 hours of driving or 11 hours of driving thereabouts. And then Monday I go to work and drive to Raleigh and stay there for the night so we can fly out of RDU at like butt crack of dawn in the morning. And then on Wednesday when I get married, we're waking up at 3 in the morning and that day is going to go forever.
Yeah. Do you have family coming out to the park for that?
No, it's just me and her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we decided to keep it small, and all of my family, right when we started to put together the wedding before in October, they all got pregnant, had kids, or had bad health, or various things happened. So we decided to kind of cut everyone out and make a very nice wedding. We got a very good videographer, a well-known videographer that works at Disney all the time. They're going to produce a wedding video.
Oh, good. There you go.
We'll have it. I'll send it to all my family and let them see.
That will be up on the Card Not Life YouTube page. I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna put it on YouTube anyways. But yeah, no, it'll be great, and I'll be back here for the cast on the 17th.
Yes. 18th. Whatever the week 17th. Is after the wedding.
17th.
Yep. And. Awesome. So we'll see you then. We'll see you on the 17th, man. Good luck. Enjoy your time and the weather. It's going to be freaking nice down there, I'm sure.
The weather's great here. It was 70 degrees today.
Oh, gross.
Like, so Sunday, over the weekend, Nicole and I were wandering around and we're like, it's hot in here. Why is it so hot in here? We had the heat set to 73 and we turned it off.
Oh, my God.
It turns out that before we turned the heat off, our heat system doesn't function in such a way that it turns on when it's too hot and brings the temperature down. The temperature was like 74 degrees outside. So we had to turn the air conditioning back on.
Oh, my God. Oh, dude. Yeah. It's been like cold and awful here. Like it's always cold during the winter in Wisconsin, but we've had like an early winter this year. It's been like just
snow
frosty. Well, we've had snow a few times and it's melted. But then it's just been like frozen rain. So we just have like a little bit of a white covering to our grass right now.
Yeah, it's rough. The frozen rain is real bad. I remember from living there, it's just so not good. But yeah, no, I don't think I'm going to have to contend with a white Christmas or a frozen rain. So if you need to escape the nonsense.
Yeah, I'll be down there in Disney next week. See you then.
I was going to say you can come to North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Just not this year.
All right. All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Cardnock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.